Reporting Bureau.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Mike Ove, and here's what's coming up.
In some cases, yields are dramatically reduced because of increased temperatures or reduced rainfall. But in some cases, as we've seen in Ethiopia, you might get a complete harvest failure and death of the trees.
That was Aaron Davis of the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew, London, on how climate change is killing coffee plants. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Speaking to the African Union summit, the head of the Libyan Presidential Council, Mohamed Al-Menfi, said Libyans are waiting for the AU to support the mechanism to remove mercenaries and foreign forces from Libya. This has been a problem that neither the UN nor the Berlin Conferences on Libya were able to solve. Wolfgang Putzai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shinawi how tough such a complicated issue is to tackle.
This is a very complicated issue. There are three different kinds of foreign forces and mercenaries in Libya. We have on one side the Russians and the Turks. We have the Syrian mercenaries hired by Russians and by Turks. We have mercenaries and other armed groups from neighboring countries. The presence of Turkish troops and Russian mercenaries, together with the Egyptian Red Line west of Sirte, contributes somehow to the stability between the east and west of Libya, to something like a balance of power. No side is able to launch a successful offensive without their foreign allies. And both sides must fear that if they would launch such an offensive, it wouldn't work as long as the Russians and Turks, respectively, are on the other side. Therefore, any withdrawal of Turks and Russians must be in a balanced way. Otherwise, this balance of power could get out of order, especially as there is no serious international ceasefire observation in place. Regarding the others, relatively easy would be to withdraw all the Syrians. Much more complicated is a withdrawal of the mercenaries and other armed groups from Niger, from Chad and Sudan. If they leave Libya with their weapons and military equipment, they would be a huge destabilizing element for their home countries. On the other side, most of them are probably not ready to hand in their weapons and de facto surrender to their own government anyway. So I'm not sure that the African Union can do much about this.
So with the rift between West backed by Turkey and East backed by Russia, could that result in two Libyan governments?
I would say if there is another government appointed by the House of Representatives, which would have a prime minister from the East, this could be eventually the case. But as it looks now, all the candidates for prime minister right now are either from Misrata or from the greater Tripoli-Misrata area. So it is currently quite unlikely that a new government in the East could be or would be established.
How about the competition between the presidential candidates who are in a shady position like General Haftar, like Saif al-Islam? Would that create a new wave of instability that would prevent holding the elections soon?
I would say much will depend right now who will become the new prime minister. If it is someone like Fatih Bashagha, who has also some trust in the East and who is able to talk with the leaders of the Libyan National Army, it would be rather unlikely that the rift would deepen even more as it is today. I also think it's rather unlikely that elections would happen in the near future. Why? Almost all of the stakeholders, the House of Representatives, the High Council of State, General Haftar, and many others can live quite well with the situation as it is right now. So if there is a new government who is able to calm down the situation a little bit, I'm sure they will continue with the discussion about the new constitution. And such a new constitution is years away. So there is a very good chance that we will see the same actors, hopefully with another prime minister, in Libya in the foreseeable future.
So would the UN have a role in keeping the ceasefire intact and continue the political discussion and the military track 5+5?
The United Nations could assume again a more influential role after a new permanent special representative is appointed. The position of Stephanie Williams is currently weakened. This is not only because she is not special representative, but only special advisor of the Secretary General, but also because countries like Russia and also France have already asked the Secretary General to appoint a new special representative as soon as possible. The Russians even said that Stephanie Williams is not able to fulfill her role. So we cannot expect anything, any major initiative or any credibility on the side of Williams until April, when the mandate of Unsmil needs to be extended. I guess we will have another special representative. Then it will depend on the personality of this new special representative, if he is able to launch a new kind of diplomatic initiative. I think it would certainly serve Libya if someone really capable, if someone with some new ideas for Libya would take over as a special representative.
That was Wolfgang Putzai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Alshinawi. Human rights advocates in Africa are increasingly spearheading discussions to amplify women's voices in climate change talks. They say working with women at the grassroots level is essential in addressing their vulnerability to disasters aggravated by long-term shifts in temperatures and weather patterns. VOA's Ruben Kiama reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Activists say that women, especially in Africa, are more vulnerable than men to the risks of extreme weather events such as drought and floods, but their voices are overshadowed when it comes to conversations around how to tackle the global climate crisis. Stella Agara is the Justice and Climate Action Leader at Akinamama wa Africa, a Pan-African women's rights organization based in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The interference with the climate patterns basically means that those people who are depending on rain-fed agriculture can no longer be able to project their produce. Neither can they determine whether they're going to be having food in the future, because the weather patterns have changed dramatically. We are experiencing El Nino and La Nina in different parts of the world right now. This basically means that certain groups are affected differently. Women are the main caregivers, and therefore they're the ones who have to think about what the family is going to eat long before anybody else has to think about it.
Some say there is an unending debate on whether climate change is real in Africa, yet the continent continues to experience changing climate patterns that threaten both human health and food security. Wangeshi Gitata Kiriga is a women's rights champion from New Faces, New Voices, an African advocacy group that focuses on expanding the role and influence of women in the financial sector.
One of the things that we're trying to do is really to build the economic resilience of women so that they're able to go through this crisis, find solutions to those challenges, but also be able to go ahead and put their solutions on the table and advance women's economic resilience. Because I think it's really important that we hear from one another, and also to share that knowledge, make our voices louder.
The group is an implementing partner of the Gracia Machel Trust and is present in 16 African countries, including Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Kenya, Mozambique, Nigeria, Rwanda, Senegal, South Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The women leaders also highlighted the gap between conversations of the Conference of Parties, the decision-making body that monitors the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and implementation mechanisms. Agara says key players need to find opportunities for women to participate meaningfully in the benefits of climate change projects. They include carbon credits, a type of permit that encourages countries or other holders to reduce greenhouse gases released into the environment.
Africa has contributed the least to the climate change problem, and yet we are going to bear the biggest brunt of the climate crisis. Most of the industrialization that has been happening in this world has been happening in the West, in the global North. Coal mining and all those other practices that have contributed to lots of carbon emission in our ozone layer have not been happening in Africa. But in terms of the crisis, we are going to bear the biggest brunt because we are not prepared at all to deal with the situation. And as far as surviving the situation is concerned, we don't even have the kind of resources that we require.
Conversations for reducing climate change are growing, but often fail to include women in decision-making, leading to slow progress in the implementation of long-term and adaptable solutions. Gitata Kiriga explains.
Even this climate change conversation is pegged on the COVID-19 pandemic, because during COVID, a lot of women experienced gender-based violence, especially in the home. Women are the ones who are thinking of nutrition. They're the ones who are thinking of energy. They're the ones who are trying to feed their children. And when those stresses that come with different shocks, whether those are caused by a global pandemic or they're caused by climate shock, unfortunately, women are the ones who end up bearing that brunt.
Some say women have been forced to find ways to attend climate change forums and conversations and negotiate as key stakeholders. Sometimes they have even had to organize their own separate meetings for women to be heard. Activists say women's voices are key to the success of projects that aim to protect communities against rising temperatures and drought. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Millions of people around the world enjoy drinking coffee, but the daily caffeine fix could be under threat because climate change is killing coffee plants. As Henry Ridgewell reports, scientists in London are working with farmers in Africa to find a solution.
Outside the vast glass houses at London's Kew Botanic Gardens, the temperature is below freezing. Inside, the heat and humidity replicate a tropical jungle. Aaron Davis leads Kew's research into coffee.
This is Arabica coffee, our preferred coffee, the one we drink in high streets and at home. It has a superior taste. And this coffee provides us with about 60% of the coffee that we drink globally. The other species over here is Robusta coffee. So this has a slightly larger leaf. This coffee provides us with the other 40% of the world's coffee supply.
The cultivation of Arabica and Robusta coffee beans supports millions of livelihoods across Africa, South America and Asia. But they're under threat because of climate change. Again, Aaron Davis.
In some cases, yields are dramatically reduced because of increased temperatures or reduced rainfall. But in some cases, as we've seen in Ethiopia, you might get a complete harvest failure and death of the trees.
The solution could be growing deep in the forests of West Africa. There are around 130 species of coffee plant, but not all taste good. In Sierra Leone, Davis and his team identified one candidate growing in the wild, Stenophylla.
And this is extremely heat tolerant and is an interesting species because it matches Arabica in terms of its superb taste.
A further two coffee species also show promise for commercial cultivation in a changing climate, Liberica and Eugeniades. Again, Aaron Davis.
That has low yields and very small beans, but it has an amazing taste.
Some believe the taste is far superior. At the 2021 World Barista Championships in Milan, Australia's Hugh Kelly won third prize with his Eugeniades espresso. Here, he tells the judges what to expect.
Today you'll taste pink guava, fresh pineapple, and passion fruit.
Researchers hope Kelly's success could be the breakthrough moment for these relatively unknown beans. The team at Kew Botanic Gardens is working with farmers in Africa on cultivating the new coffees commercially. Catherine Kiwuka oversees the projects in Uganda.
What requirements do they need? How do we boost its productivity? Instead of it being dominated by only two species, we have the opportunity to tap into the value of other coffee species.
It's hoped that substantial volumes of Liberica coffee will be exported from Uganda to Europe this year. Researchers hope it will provide a sustainable income for farmers and an exciting new taste for coffee drinkers. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Mali's interim Prime Minister Choguel Kokala Maiga has accused France of dividing the country. In a speech late yesterday, Maiga said Mali would always be grateful to French soldiers who died in the fight against Islamist militants. But he said France's military mission in the country, which began almost 10 years ago, allowed terrorists to regroup and reorganize. France's Operation Barkhane, an anti-insurgent mission, has begun drawing down troops on northern Mali military bases. France is evaluating its military presence in Mali after Bamako last week expelled the French ambassador for sharply criticizing the military government. Tensions between Mali and France have been rising since Paris-backed West African sanctions after Mali's military government delayed elections. The military government pulled back from an agreement to hold elections this month, saying it would hold them instead in 2026. The United Nations Children's Fund warns the Horn of Africa is facing a climate-induced emergency and says the international community must act now to prevent a catastrophic loss of life and livelihoods. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The specter of the 2011 famine in Somalia hangs over the dire situation confronting millions of people in the Horn of Africa. That emergency killed 250,000 people, half of them children. Hunger and malnutrition have worsened in the region after 3 years of consecutive drought. But famine has not been reported in any area. UN agencies, however, say that could rapidly change. The UN Children's Fund predicts as many as 20 million people in Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia will need water and food assistance in the next 6 months. Mohamed Malik Fall is UNICEF Eastern and Southern African Regional Director. Speaking on a line from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, he says children will be among the biggest victims of this crisis.
Right now, nearly 5.5 million children in these four countries are threatened by acute malnutrition and an estimated 1.4 million children by severe acute malnutrition. UNICEF fears that this number will increase by 50% if the rain don't come in the next 3 months.
Three dry seasons in a row have decimated crops, led to severe water scarcity, and killed livestock. This has forced families to leave their homes in search of grazing land and water, increasing the risk of disease and severe malnutrition. The World Food Program estimates 13 million people across Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia are gripped by severe hunger. UNICEF's Mohamed Fall says children caught in this climate emergency are missing out on meals, on school, and on access to life-saving health services.
Families are taking extreme measures to survive and in many cases leaving their home, which put children on the move at particular risk. This is a crisis that required a collective response, ensuring access to clean water, nutrition, and safe space for children.
UNICEF is appealing for $123 million to provide life-saving aid for the most vulnerable in the four countries until the end of June. It warns many children will die or end up with lifelong cognitive or physical damage if the international community fails to act quickly. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Botswana health authorities say the Southern African country is facing a critical drug shortage that is affecting COVID-19 patients. The shortage of antiviral pills is also affecting patients with chronic health problems. From Gaborone, reporter Mqondisi Dube has the details.
Assistant Minister of Health Sithumuli Latisitswe says procurement challenges due to COVID-19 have contributed to drug shortages. He says lockdowns and restrictions meant the country was unable to get its usual supplies.
Kana melemo ya rona ka ha ere kwang ka teng e re kwa mo bathong ba ba ikemetseng ha corona e goroga.
We procure from independent suppliers. We were negotiating with suppliers when the coronavirus pandemic broke out. There were lockdowns and travel restrictions. It delayed negotiations as focus was turned to the fight against COVID-19. We need to revise our procurement procedures going forward.
He says availability of drugs is at 40%. And the national stock is under strain as uptake has increased during COVID-19.
Haper ga kulogolo gore corona le yone ine ya ira gore batho ba le bantsi jaano ba nne le malwetse a mantsi bo gore gore tsereneng.
A corona meant people develop complications, which means drug stock is getting depleted. Our consumption went up. The shortage has affected patients with chronic diseases.
Lelatisitswe says they expect the situation to improve in the coming weeks. In the meantime, he says patients should take alternative available drugs until the situation improves. The Minister of Health's Deputy Permanent Secretary, Tsepo Machacha, says COVID-19 related complications have seen consumption of drugs increase significantly.
We have seen a situation where the use of drugs has increased sixfold. This is due to COVID-19. We were not prepared for such a situation. There are so many COVID-19 related complications which require medication.
Vaccination is key to lessening COVID-19 severity and complications. Botswana is one of the most vaccinated countries in Africa, with more than 70% of the adult population inoculated. The country has more than 3 million COVID-19 vaccine doses in stock. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
A South African panel of experts investigating the cause of violent lootings and unrest last July and the government response has found that the government and security agents failed to act decisively to stop the chaos. Describing the violence as a threat to national security, the panel also established that infighting within the ruling African National Congress contributed significantly to the unrest. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
For 8 days last July, gangs of South Africans moved from one shopping mall to another, vandalizing property and looting anything they could grab. By the time peace was restored, an estimated 354 people had died and more than $3 billion in damage was done. This followed the arrest and imprisonment of former President Jacob Zuma for contempt of court. President Cyril Ramaphosa appointed a panel to investigate the violence and assess the government's response. This week, the panel said the unrest was directly linked to the conflict within the ruling African National Congress, pitting the government against those who thought it was treating Zuma unfairly. The ANC infighting led to antagonism within state security agencies, which hampered their response. The panel also found that structures including the National Security Council, chaired by President Cyril Ramaphosa, failed to quickly categorize, prevent and disrupt the violence. Lack of cooperation between the police and the intelligence unit also is blamed for failing to prevent the chaos, which many Zuma supporters clearly saw coming when they used social media to call for a national shutdown. Opposition parties are calling for those who failed to act to be held to account. Foreign nationals are even more worried by the report. Anti-immigrant sentiments are growing in the country, and Mxolisi Ncube from the Patriotic Front Party told VOA that many fear xenophobic violence could break out.
I'm saying this because in the past we have seen these attacks escalating into a serious loss of life, serious loss of property, a lot of arson around the country, and the government would only react maybe a month after this would have started, after a lot has been lost.
Anti-migrant violence has erupted repeatedly in South Africa over the past decade. In a country where as much as 30% of the population is unemployed, migrant workers often become targets for public anger. But Bongani Mkhwananzi, spokesperson of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, says South Africa has learned its lessons from the July unrest.
So we are confident still that the South African authorities can still manage to take care of the situation. Unless and until they are complacent by choice, but in capacity, they have full capacity to be able to control this.
The panel has urged the government to urgently address unemployment and poverty in the country after investigations found that poor people joined the lawlessness and looting as a result of their unacceptable living conditions and the government's failure to provide them with basic services. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The head of the United Nations Food Agency in Madagascar says the cyclone that battered parts of the country over the weekend killed at least 20 people, displaced 50,000 and destroyed crops that were close to being harvested. Cyclone Batsirai slammed into the Indian Ocean island late on Saturday, knocking down houses and electricity lines along the southeast coastline until it moved away late on Sunday, leaving some towns and villages partially or totally destroyed. With the population of nearly 30 million, Madagascar had already been dealing with the aftermath of Cyclone Anna, which killed 55 people and displaced 130,000 just 2 weeks earlier. Cyclone Batsirai struck a different part of the island, further south, where the population is facing a precarious situation in terms of food supplies because of a severe drought. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Mike Kobe in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voanews.com.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndumbulo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05.